This episode of the Switchpoint podcast is sponsored by Industrial Rail Journal. IRJ was created to shine light on one of the most important but often overlooked sectors of the rail industry, industrial rail operations. From chemical plants and steel mills to grain terminals and transload facilities, thousands of businesses rely on rail infrastructure every single day. Industrial Rail Journal was built to highlight the people, operations, safety, and infrastructure that keep the rail industry moving. Learn more at industrialrailjournal.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Switchpoint podcast, powered by Axiom Rail Services. I'm your host, Joe Poro. I am happy that you're here listening today. I hope you are following us. We upload new videos and new content every week. You can follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or watch the videos on YouTube. Today, we're joined by our guest, Carl Ganson, Rail Operations Manager at Wang Technologies, also known as Waytech and WT Rail. Waytech is a leading weights and measures sales and service provider across Texas and Louisiana. And WT Rail specializes in 80,000-pound rail scale certifications nationwide, actually. And in fact, WT Rail is one of only four companies in the U.S. that offers this highly specialized service. And Carl has been in the scale industry since 2014 and is a licensed scales technician in multiple states. He also serves as a committee member of the AREMA Scale Committee and is the Houston Region Chairman of the Texas Chemistry Alliance. So, Carl, welcome to the Switchpoint.
I am glad to be here, Joe.
I want to hear kind of all about you and what your business does. So give us a little bit of background of yourself and how you got into the scale industry.
So I grew up, I spent my first 25 years up in the snow-covered state of Minnesota. Lived in southern Minnesota. And then after Hurricane Ike came down, we had a lot of customers that were nationwide customers, and they wanted us to come down. And so I came down to Texas after that, and I ended up buying the Texas portion of the roofing company that I worked for. And so I had a commercial roofing company, and I ran that for a number of years. And then one of my customers, he had a company called Wang Technologies, Waytech, and I did a lot of his roofs. And what I really wanted to do is I wanted someone to kind of be a mentor of me again. My father-in-law was a mentor in the roofing business. And so I stepped into the scale business because he owned a scale company. He owned a number of businesses, but one of them that he owned was a scale company. And so when I came in, I said, okay, I'll come in and I'll start low man on the totem pole and I'll learn everything from there. And one of the things that I thought was very, very funny the first day or first couple of weeks that I started is, you know, we're testing floor scales, we're testing truck scales, we're testing, you know, railroad track scales, but you're constantly lifting weights all day long, right? So I'm thinking like, man, why isn't everybody here just jacked, right? You know, because I mean, you're getting paid to lift weights, right? Well, then I realized that, you know, I was doing it probably the most bullheaded and stubborn way that I could when I moved the weights. And then they showed me a lot of tricks and tips and, you know, I learned from there. But
that's awesome.
Yeah. So then Waytech in 2020, we decided to buy the equipment to test rail scales to 80,000 pounds. And I put my name in the hat as operations manager for that. And that's really when I really got fully submerged into the rail industry, you know, because, you know, we didn't know what we didn't know, right? So when we came in, you know, I had to learn as much stuff as possible in as short a time as possible. And during that time, I've made a lot of really good friends in the rail industry, you know, just like you, you know?
Yeah. You know, Once that rail bug bites you, it doesn't ever let go, you know? And I've just kind of come to accept it over the last 15 or so years. It's like, once it bites you, that's it. This is what I'm going to die doing, but it's okay because I love it. And yeah, I love 100%. The connections. I love, you know, it's always learning something new. And even if it's something that I already know, being able to impart that wisdom on somebody else as a mentor or a trainer, like, you know, just watching that aspect of like the importance and value of rail just like click in their mind. Like I love seeing that and helping build that next generation of, you know, rail or rail adjacent workforce. You know, I think that's super important.
Well, one of the similarities between the rail industry and the scale industry, two things. It's very generational, right? Yep. The rail industry is incredibly generational, right? The scale industry is also the same, but they're all providing jobs and services in the background, right? You know, most people don't see, you know, or think about the railroad unless there's an issue, right? Yeah. They don't understand how much freight actually gets moved day to day and how many facilities have rail, just like scales. One of the things I tell everybody is the Bible has 11 verses about talking about accurate weights and measures. So mm-hmm. we're not the oldest profession in the world, but you know, we're still pretty old.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, I guess that's a good way to think about that. You know, and a lot of the customers that we use or that we service, they utilize the scales as well. You know, I typically see them when I'm out there, if I'm doing an audit, most of them are truck scales that the truckers go over, you know, their empty weight and their load weight in and out of the facility. But, you know, going into Wyoming where there's a lot of coal plants out there, you know, I see it out there as well. And it's awesome when you see, you know, the rail cars over them too. It's like, you don't think about it. Most people think of a scale similarly to you as the railroad. You know, they think of like in the kitchen or the bathroom scale. You know, they don't think of how big a scale could actually be. And it's just super important because it affects safety. It affects, you know, also compliance. And to your point of how much of the actual commodities get moved across using rail. Most people just see trucks on the road and they think, you know, oh, that's how it happens. It's like, well, wait a minute. Rail is that big middle piece. It's not necessarily the first and last mile. It's that middle piece that moves, you know, millions and millions of tons of commodity every week. And we'll jump into more of those specifics. But for myself and for the viewers and listeners, tell us a little bit more about you, because I want to ask right off the bat, as a Houstonian, are you a Texans fan or are you a Cowboys fan?
So I will say this. I am more a Texans fan than I am a Dallas fan.
Okay.
I was very, very young when the Minnesota Vikings made a trade for Herschel Walker to set up the Dallas Cowboys. You know, so I've never been a Cowboys fan. So when I moved down here, it was no love lost. And, you know, I'm an old Oilers fan. Mm-hmm. And I'm a Texans fan. So whenever they have the throwbacks, when they play the Titans, I don't know, it's too bad because, you know, being from Houston, Columbia Blue is our color, Columbia Blue and Red. That's our city's color. So, I mean, the police cars back in the 80s, that's what the colors of the police cars were.
Absolutely. So. I remember that. And, you know, it bothers me so much. I feel like the Titans shouldn't be allowed to wear that throwback uniform because that's the Houston Oilers. You know, that's Warren Moon. That's a Houstonian thing. So I grew up down, for those of you who don't know, I was originally from the Houston area, actually closer to Galveston. I grew up down in Alvin is where I grew up. And football was such a huge part of that culture down there. And, you know, there was rival schools between us and Ball High. And I mean, it was just an intense rivalry. So growing up football, all things football meant, you know, it's like, that's what you had to do. High school, we all thought none of us were getting out, that we thought we'd live in high school forever as friends. And, you know, it was like, okay, well, when you're done with high school, where do you go? It was pretty much either the chemical plants, you know, it was Amoco back at the time before it was BP, or you went into the military. Like that was pretty much it. Or you could work some of the farms. Like Froberg's is all down there. That's our family farm down there. So there really wasn't many options. So I went the military route and then went law enforcement and came out and then got into railroading. And so I'm a first generation railroader. And I mean, I love it. You know, there's so much that you can do with it. And once you're in it, you just find that it's such a good community. And the part that hooked me was the safety aspect. And so I'd love to kind of steer it back a little bit towards, you know, the importance of the rail scales themselves and how that impacts safety if they're improperly loaded, right? There's springs and there's AAR specs that show like the rail car can't exceed this certain weight. Is there something like that for the trucks too? I'm sure there's a DOT scale for truckers.
Yeah. DOT is 80,000. Yeah. And I mean, it's a huge role, right? Especially when you have cars that aren't, you know, typical commodity weighted cars, right? Mm-hmm. Where they know that, hey, we're going to be close to to 280 or so, right? Mm-hmm. Scrappers are notorious, right? Scrap yards are notorious for A, having really horrible rail inside their yard, yes. But then, and then also overloading them, same with grain. But yeah, it's a huge safety because every single tie plate, every single aspect of 1 foot of rail, you're jeopardizing all of that with an overloaded car.
Yeah.
You know, and how it used to be is long time ago, all the class ones, they kind of, in the short lines, they would each kind of have their own scales and they would go and test their scales themselves. Like UP and BN, they actually had their own scale cars that they would go in and to verify at the industry to make sure that they were properly correct. And you know, they've kind of gotten away from that. There's still a couple, NS and CSX, they still do that, but I mean, you know, UP, BN, they kind of stopped doing that. So,
which is kind of opened the doors for businesses like ours, right, to step up to the plate and help these customers manage, because even though the class ones or whoever are kind of stepping away from it, right, they're saying, hey, it's not worth it to have the manpower. Their whole thing is like reducing workforce, right, and automating as much as possible. Like, okay, that's your business model, but that doesn't mean the compliance stops there just because your interest stops, right? And you still have to have somebody help these customers out. And so there's a lot to know that these downstream customers just getting into the game, they don't understand that they're going to be, you know, subject to. They don't know there's training that has to go on with that. There's oversight and compliance with these things, you know, and check-ins. So tell me a little bit, what is it that, you know, the role that you play in it? What's the day-to-day look like for you and WT and the impact that it has with some of its customers?
Yeah. So, well, just real quick, just about the safety, and this was on a truck scale. So typically truck scales are set up 120,000 pounds, right? And then the little readout that says what the weight is, usually it's at 2% above that. It will dash out, right? So I had a call from a customer that both of their truck scales, you know, they would read up into a certain point and then it would just dash out. And I'm like, okay, well, let's see. And I put it on a simulator and everything's working the way it should be. And then I finally asked them. Now, keep in mind, legal load for a non-permitted semi-truck is 80,000 pounds. And this was at a grain operation. And it was about 122,000 pounds that they were loading these trucks to that's when it was cutting off. So they were loading it even higher than 122,000 pounds. So, you know, think about that. Just as you see a train passing by, you know, think of like a semi truck that's right next to you that could be 40,000 pounds, 45,000 pounds overweight. I mean, that could create a serious risk for stopping, for, you know, for turning, for, you know, the center of gravity of that trailer and that truck was not meant for that.
Tires too, they could blow out under that weight.
100%.
You know, and it's to that point exactly. People don't understand the risks that they're driving right next to, or the community, you know, if a tank car is overloaded, you know, because when you start moving liquids, you know, by weight, some of them, you know, they have like in the rail cars themselves, have like a little burp valve, like a pressure relief device, pressure relief valve. And, you know, the cars can only be filled up to like 96% capacity because the gas expands or what have you. So like, it can't be 100% capacity, but these communities are entrusting these loaders in these facilities to do it exactly to spec. And, you know, if the weight's off, if the fill limit is off, like that grossly affects, you know, the safety and, you know, the contents of the commodity itself too, right?
For sure.
So there's certain certifications that I'm sure are in place for these scales. Talk to me a little bit about the certification side of this that you do.
So I have a crew of two men, and they go from Texas, Louisiana, basically north to Minnesota in Illinois, Wisconsin. We have gone out to Georgia a couple times. We've gone to Florida, but that's typically what they do. To carry the 80,000 pounds of weight, it's actually two 18-wheelers. And so there's a crane on the back end of one of my 18-wheelers, and there's a cart that weighs 8,000 pounds that goes on to the rail. And then we stack that up with 72,000 pounds. So
now, is that like all one piece, or is those all welded together when you deliver them?
So the rail cart itself, that's just, you know, by itself. And then the weights that we have are 2,000 pound blocks. Yeah, we've got a crane that picks them up and then sets them in the cart, and the cart transports them back and forth.
Got you. Okay.
But each one of those weights, every single thing has to be certified. It has to be certified to be accurate. And we have to take our cart and our weights in once a year. There's little cavities that they will make adjustments to the weights. If it's not correct, they will make it correct. So we test off of one of the master scales. Currently, Chicago has one, but they're talking about closing it down up at the USDA. But we go to the state of Minnesota. And the state of Minnesota has a full railroad track scale. It's a full 80-foot scale that is the most accurate high-capacity scale that I've ever seen. She'll get that thing down to the weight of a nickel. And if it's the weight of a nickel off on that 80,000 pounds, she'll calibrate it in and make sure that's good to go.
That's awesome. So that's like the world clock of scales.
Yep.
Like that's where everybody relies on that one. I mean, I guess I never really thought of that, but it makes so much sense. And it makes so much sense as to why there's probably not 100,000 of those different scale master scales all over the place, right? Because you don't want somebody, some independent place out there just, you know, certifying that, hey, your stuff is right or it's accurate. You know, you want to have that contained into one, funneled into one, you know, one aspect of compliance.
And if you think about any commodity that you may have at your house, in your studio, that commodity has been weighed at least 10 times over a certified scale, you know, through the raw goods, the manufacturing, the product that it might be. So it's at a minimum of 10 times. But yeah, to go back, that master scale, what they do is they take their weights, and their weights are certified by NIST out in Maryland. That's the national governing body for weights and measures. But then take it even another step past that. The United States of America has our weight, the kilogram. Up until, you know, a couple of years ago, that kilogram, they would verify that against the one main kilogram in Paris, France. So all of this, like your weight, the kilogram, comes from one single weight that's in Paris. You know, one single weight that's highly, highly valuable, that's highly, highly guarded. And, you know, but all of it can be traced back to that one weight, which is insane if you really think about it. We have a world where everything is weighed and it can all be traced back to one specific weight.
Yeah, that's crazy when you think about it. You know, like it all just, all the commodities that are moved are verified off of, you know, that one little one. So talk to us a little bit about the types of commodities that are moved. So I would imagine it's probably not necessarily like vehicles or stack trains or something. Maybe like, is it mostly grain? Is it coal? Is it sand? What's typically the largest commodity that you see getting used for scales?
I mean, that's kind of regional, right? You know, like you were talking about out in Wyoming, you got a lot of big mines out there. There's sand, there's coal, there's bentonite. You know, so those are more aggregate mining operations. Down here on the Texas, Louisiana Gulf Coast, it's pellets, you know, pellets and chemicals. And there's a lot of tank cars down here.
And when you say pellets, you're talking about like the plastic little polymers, the little
The little plastic polymers.
Okay,
because they get shipped out and they go all over the world. You know, the refineries, the coke, the byproduct of the coke. You know, that's a big one. You know, you start getting into, so everybody's preparing for harvest, right? In the Midwest.
Yeah.
We make two larger runs every year to go, you know, because we have to go to Minnesota anyways to get the cart certified. And we usually go up there and we make a big run, right before harvest. So whatever grains, that these co-ops and all the, you know, the ADMs and the Senex and all the different co-ops around, you know, make sure that their scales are good to go right before harvest.
And it's the same thing on the rail side, right? It's dependent on the different geographical regions, right? So even by states, it varies, you know, like, and maybe Midland, Odessa, you've got a lot of frac sand terminals out there. And then, you know, maybe in West Virginia or Wyoming, you got the coal, and up north, you got the steel, you know, where it all gets melted down into steel. And then it goes even further north up to Detroit and gets turned into cars and trucks. And then maybe it's all the way down to the Carolinas where you've got mostly lumber that's down there, you know, so it's just moving all these different commodities makes sense that, you know, to your point, it's dependent on where you're at.
And if you look at it nationwide, I don't know if there's an official number, but just kind of what I know to be out there, there's about 3,500 railroad track scales out nationwide. You know, Texas is one of the largest. We have between 350 and 400. Louisiana has about 155, 160. But, you know, you take an old railroad area like mm-hmm. Ohio. Ohio has like 150 railroad track scales up there, you know, so just because of all the manufacturing and all of the different types of commodities. So,
yeah. And I like living up here. You know, there's a lot of history that people just think Ohio, that nobody thinks much of it, but I love it. I love being up here. I love being a Yankee. It's a beautiful state. I have the largest truck up here. There's no road rage. I get four seasons. Right. You know, I'm the most dangerous person up here. You know, there's no venomous snakes anywhere. There's no huge banana spiders all over your front porch when you walk out. I love it. It's a great place. But there's a lot of history up here. And, you know, there's a lot of like old Carnegie steel between here and Chicago too. And a lot of these rail tracks run on that stuff. And people don't understand, you know, that this whole Rust Belt area, there's a lot of infrastructure between Chicago, Cleveland, which is known as the Mistake by the Lake. And then you've got Pittsburgh, right? So all through there, there's a lot of heavy industrial stuff. People don't realize how much actually passes through this whole area to get to the rest of the country. So you're super knowledgeable on this stuff. And you said you kind of came into it cold turkey from roofing. What is it that you had to learn the quickest about coming into the scale side of things?
What you thought was an accurate weight is not a certified weight. Okay. So think about, you go to the gym, right? And because we get a lot of recycle yards that they've got like a 45 or a 50 pound dumbbell that's sitting right there. And that's what they use as their quote unquote reference weight, right? But there's a big difference between a reference weight and a certified weight, you know? So that's where we're certified. You know, every single weight that we have goes to a state laboratory that they test every single weight once a year. So, and all of those go back all the way back to NIST and all the way back to Paris, right? So that's a big thing is there's so many weights that we see every day that, you know, it is, as long as it's not legal for trade, mm-hmm. the number that's on there, it's a reference number, right? But if they buy or sell a commodity with it, that's where it needs to be a certified weight.
Got it.
And then the other big thing is, if you ever want to know how much, you know, how much somebody weighs, a scale guy knows more than anybody else in the world, because we constantly, we're stepping on scales, we're, you know, to troubleshoot before you start throwing, you know, 1500 pounds on a scale, hey, I'm going to walk all the corners to make sure that it's doing what it's supposed to do. So all of us scale guys know our weight pretty much down to a T. That, you know, when I go to the doctor, I tell them that their scale isn't correct. And they look at me and say, well, I mean, I just weighed myself 8 times today. So,
yeah. So I imagine there's some kind of federal minimum standard to make sure that, you know, that the DOT has to make sure that these scales are accurate. But then there's probably also times when, to your story earlier, where you said somebody had the scales that were like zeroing out or something, but how can somebody know if their scale is off, or how do they start to get off of weight? And is it like a massive increase at one point? Or, you know, talk to me a little bit about the oversight that's required to, you know, keep these scales compliant and accurate.
The simplest ones is, let's say the scale is moving up and down, but there's nothing on the scale, right? Mm-hmm. That's typically when you know that there might be an issue. There might be some water intrusion, because all of these scales, you have to think, they're at a pit level, right? They're at the rail level. So all of the mechanics of the scale are below that, right? So, you know, down here, you see it a lot where once their weights start going off, they start noticing a little bit of a change. Down here with the plastic polymer pellets, that's a big issue because along with like more corn than soybeans. But once that gets like a car gets overloaded and it gets down into the scale, nobody really thinks anything of it because they can't see it. They can't see underneath the scale. Well, I've had it many, many times where we put our cart on and a customer saying that they're weighing 3,000 to 6,000 pounds per car light. And I put my car on it and it's, yeah, it's being light because there's so much material packed up underneath it.
Got it. Stops it from compressing.
That stops it from compressing, you know, bad track. I mean, I know that you've been in plenty of industries where, you know, the FRA keeps talking about that they're going to start going into more industries. But you've seen plenty of bad track inside of a facility, you know, and if it's leading up to the scale, it could make inconsistent weights as they're weighing the cars. But those are like the common, hey, right here, right?
Yeah.
The ones that are the scary is the ones that are giving away product without knowing it. The ones that are almost intolerant or it's pretty close. We only have this issue every once in a while. They check it with their reference scale car. A lot of facilities go out and they'll take an old scale car and they'll take the stamped weight that's on it and they'll say, hey, this is how much it weighs. Well, good practice for me is we weigh that car. If a facility has a car, we weigh it immediately after we test the scale, right? Because that weight that's stamped on there, that stamped weight mm-hmm. could change between, you know, weather, time of year, what is in there. So we want them to have the most accurate weight when they test it. But yeah, that's really the ones that people lose money is the small cracks that they don't think that, you know, well, we're still in compliance. We're still good, you know?
Yeah.
But that adds up, you know, when you have an ExxonMobil that might be running two unit trains a day, well, mm-hmm. I mean, that's going to add up quickly.
Right. So obviously wear and tear, the type of product, and it sounds like maybe the pits or the terrain or the subterrain or sub-ballast if it's on tracks, right? And the erosion, I guess, back to the geographical point, right? You know, where you have softer soil down south, that probably affects it all as well, or flooding, you know, flood prone areas like Louisiana and Alabama and, you know, Galveston, that probably, you know, drastically affects, you know, the accuracy of those scales also. So what's something that you would, you know, want your customers and other people in this industry to know about their scales? What's something that maybe is just, you know, I know you spoke to that common misconception about, or the reference weight isn't the certified weight. So what's something that you would want your customers to know about? What's maybe the largest misunderstanding that your customers have that you'd want them to know?
Well, yeah, one of the largest misunderstandings is they don't necessarily know if it's illegal for trade, if they buy or sell off of it. And that's one of the things where if they don't have to have me come in to check the scale, that's one of the biggest issues about a scale is you just assume that it's right all the time.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, a question that I get asked is when we have to recalibrate the scale, they say, well, how long has it been out? How long has it been out of tolerance? And that's really a hard question because, you know, most times that we test AAR in NIST, they say that we have to do it once per year, right? So that's the interval that a lot of them do. Unfortunately, we have to calibrate a lot of scales. So I think increasing the intervals, increasing maintenance, you know, just along with your products when you go out there, it's like, well, yeah, nobody's looked at my track for 6 years. It's like, well, man, a lot can happen in 6 years that you might want to take a look at. And the type and what they're actually trying to do, like, is it suitable for the application? That's a big thing because there's two types of railroad track scales. There is a static, which is the cars get weighed statically. So they both go up and then they just get weight, right? And there's an in-motion scale. And the in-motion scale, a lot of the issues that we see is people try to put them too close to a turn or too close to a switch where they can't keep consistent speed while they're running the locomotive. Because most locomotives that are out there that are inside the facilities, you're supposed to be going, you know, 3 to 7 miles an hour over the scale. Well, most locomotives, they don't even register a speed limit until 10, right? So, or five miles an hour. So they're kind of going blind.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I never really thought about that as the placement of the scale, because you're right. Going into that turn, that weight can shift real heavy and make the scale read, you know, more than what's on there. Or if you're going, you know, maybe up a hill or down a hill. So having it placed on straight track, you know, that's probably the best place to put that. What's probably, you think, the most unique thing that you've seen since you've been in this industry that's rail related or truck related, anything DOT that has to do with scales? What's good, bad, ugly? What do you think the most interesting story is that you'd share?
So we were out doing a scrapyard.
Always the scrapyards.
Yeah, we were doing a scrapyard down in East Texas. All of a sudden, my guys were in there. They're making adjustments inside the scale house, and they come out and they could see it coming from a little bit. But yeah, had a 5-foot alligator that wanted to use the cart as some shade. So, that was pretty interesting. We got some good videos of that.
It was hissing at you. A lot of people don't know that the gators will start to hiss. You know, I had that when I was in. I got stationed in North Carolina for a little bit. And we were at this one secure location, and it had tall fences, and there was a doe that had jumped the fence and it got stuck there. And we were, you know, walking through this tall grass. It was like waist high grass to get to it. And then we just started hearing this hiss real loud, and we realized what it was. And then we could look down and we saw this real black, dark spot, and it was an alligator. And don't mess with that. You know, we all drew our pistols and everyone was like, don't shoot it. Southeast Texas, especially, can be inhospitable to people who aren't familiar with the terrain and the types of animals and wildlife that's in there. Do you ever see like snakes get into the scales?
Oh yeah, 100%. You see snakes, black widows, brown widows. It's always kind of nerve wracking when you go into a pit, especially down along the coast, because you don't know what you're going to get in there.
That's right.
It's always kind of, I mean, that's, you know, like you said, you've been Yankee-fied.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, right. There's not a whole lot of things that are out there that can kill you. Yeah. Right. As far as wild animals.
Yeah.
Where, yeah, down here, you know, you get out to West Texas and I mean, there's rattlesnakes along the main beams of the things. I always would get nervous when I'd see frogs or, you're at a grain place and there might be a mouse. I always get nervous because where there's frogs and mice, there's usually snakes, you know? So one of the things that I have to do for my day to day is I have to go all over the US to get new customers. So, I like that very, very much because I can talk to the scale companies because we work for other scale companies also. Mm-hmm. So I talk to guys that have been in the industry for 40, 50 years, you know, guys that have lived in it. And, you know, I've tried to get them to tell some stories and, you know, there's some interesting ones. But going down the Mississippi River in fall, that's one of the things that I miss being from up north, mm-hmm. that you now get is we don't have fall. Fall is about 4.5 hours.
Yeah,
you know, we get about 4.5 hours of fall.
Yep.
You know, so I miss the trees changing and the leaves changing.
Yeah.
You
know. So pecan trees and oak trees, and they just go straight to brown and they fall. And then you got stuff getting sucked up in the mower and you can't walk barefoot in the yard, especially because we had a pecan orchard not too far from us. Our neighbors had it, but neighbors down south are not like neighbors up here. Like it's down there, you know, it's a lot of pasture and property between us. And so you walking out there barefoot and you're like, oh my God, this hurts so much walking on those little pecan shells. Or the oak pollen was something that always got me. And it's like living up here, you know, fall is so beautiful, especially in the Cuyahoga Valley. And that's really when I'm going to try and get you up here so you can see and just let you remember exactly what it's like, you know, fall up north, because man, it hits different, you know? And I think that's something that we kind of touched on, but not really, is how the weather affects some of these scales. Right. Whether it's a truck scale, like I would say maybe like, I don't know what they're called, but I would just call them like an elevated scale where the truckers drive up a ramp and they get up on top of it and go down. Right. You know, if snow and ice gets up underneath there and it stops it from going down. I know in the rail side, you know, up here we have these big old massive flamethrowers that just torch the rails and starts to melt that stuff. You know, is that anything that would affect a scale? Like, would it burn the wiring on it? Would it affect the mag? You know, how does that affect that?
a lot of times when guys pressure wash a scale.
Okay.
So typically the components of a scale, there's load cells that are in there. And these are sensors that, you know, they're typically about 8 inches tall or so in truck and rail scales. You know, they go in there and they're cleaning with the pressure washer, and they don't really necessarily know what they don't know, right? So they're spraying all the wires and they're spraying the load cells, and a lot of times they can cause damage that way, you know, because there's electronic boards in there that communicate to get the scale. So, I mean, one of the things, like the readout of the scale, you have to think of it like just a big calculator, right? Mm-hmm. So it's taking the millivolt readings from all of the load cells, and it says, okay, at this millivolt reading, this weighs X amount of pounds. And then they combine all that, and then that's how they get their final weight. If you have a picture in your mind of like going to the doctor's office, mm-hmm. and the old tear beam scale,
yeah,
there isn't a whole lot of those for industry out there anymore. What is crazy is that master scale that Minnesota has, that is an old Terabeam scale, and it was made in 1921. It's an awesome. Old Fairbanks scale. And yes, that is, it's so awesome. It's over 100 years old, and it's phenomenal in the condition that it's in.
You know, it's funny, talking about the Terabeam scales, like as a kid, it was always like impressive to watch move that weight one more over, and you're like, oh yeah, I'm in the next weight group. And now as an adult, when they move it back over, you're like, oh, I should go back the other way. Like it's hurtful. Man. Like they size me up and they slide it like 5 notches over real quick. I'm like, wait a minute, let's not be too hasty here. Let's see.
Oh, man.
Let's see
where it's at. Hey, when I was a kid, I thought I was cool because my mom got me Husky jeans.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I was like, all right, I'm a grown boy now. Now it's like, yeah. I'm just a fat I can't. Hate to go on the scale. That's funny.
Yeah. And I mean, one of the coolest parts about scales mm-hmm. is most of it is manufactured right here in America. I mean, that is a phenomenal thing. I mean, there's scale manufacturers. You've got a couple major manufacturers up in Ohio. Mm-hmm. There's one in Wisconsin, and then there's a couple other ones. They're all peppered throughout the country. But that is an amazing thing. You know, the manufacturers, when COVID hit, when they couldn't get the supplies and the steel from China, mm-hmm. well, it affected them, but it affected them more on the workforce side than having the material. You know, we weren't waiting for ships of steel to come in from China because it's right here in America.
That's right.
And I really think that that's a great thing to have, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. So what would you say to somebody who's looking to get into this business? What should they expect? How can somebody even get into scaling business?
Yeah, so first off, I think the hardest part is going to be to find a scale company in your area, right?
Yeah.
That's one of the things with scale companies is we're always in the background. We're out of sight, out of mind, right? So the easiest way would probably scale company, scale calibration near me, because otherwise, if you just do scale, you're going to, who knows what you're going to get. You know, you're probably going to get a cat scale because cat scale has, you know, however many thousands of truck scales that they have.
I used to use the cat scales when I would PCS in the military. I'd move around and they'd say, go take your U-Haul, drive it up there empty, and then load it up and bring back the. And so, of course, we'd all get cinder blocks and all kinds of. And I don't have the government come after me now for back pay. You know, we'd load it up down there. We'd blast that cat scale out at max weight. And they'd be like, you have 160,000 pounds of household goods. It's like, yes, I absolutely do.
Yes, sir. Like, yes, right. sir.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I got a lot of friends that for former military that, they did the same thing. I mean, y'all knew what you were doing. And you know, the COs and all the other guys, I mean, they knew too. So
you're making me move. You're going to pay for it, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
That's funny. Okay. So I learned a lot. I'm sure our listeners and our viewers learned quite a bit. Are there any final closing thoughts you want the listeners or viewers to know about that we didn't cover?
The biggest thing is it's a rewarding industry. It's an industry that no matter what, it's still going to be around, right? Just like the railroad industry, no matter how much that everybody wants to regulate us out of business, it never will be because we're too vital to the world economy, the national economy, the state and local economies. It's a good profession to get into. I enjoy that I'm part of the rail profession because I meet interesting folks like yourself and great people that are out there. And that'd probably be my biggest thing of to everybody is, number one, be yourself. Mm-hmm. Number two, love everybody. And realize that, you know, some people aren't going to like you because you're you, and that's okay. You know, just keep on being you. Don't let them affect you, that you change the way that you are.
Love that. Positive mindset going into really any industry, but, you know, especially for the younger generation, the next generation that's coming to replace us, right, who want to get into our business. It's keeping that positive mindset. Just keep on trucking, you know, keep moving forward and know that what you're doing has a positive impact on the economy of the United States. And just keep after it. I love that. That's a great message. Okay, so where can our listeners learn more about Scales? Obviously, other than contacting you, where can they learn more about this? And where can they learn more about your company? How do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, so the easiest way to get in touch with me and to start a conversation is just at our website, wt-rail.com. Or way-tech.com.
I love it. Okay. Well, Carl, I had a great talk with you. I'm going to have to send you a new hat. We got new shirts, new swag. I'm going to send you all a new box.
Yeah.
Yep. I'll get you the new ones. We got the gray ones with our Merlot colored logos on it. We'll get you the big coffee mugs. Nothing as nice as the cowboy hat, but they're the good Richardson 112 snapback. So they're a good hat, but, all right. Well, I appreciate everybody who is listening in. I want to thank all of our viewers. Carl, thanks again for your time and God bless. If you liked this episode, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and leave a review on what you thought about it. It goes a long way. Make sure to click that notification bell so you're always up to date whenever we release a new episode. For those watching on YouTube, make sure to like, subscribe, and share this episode with people who you feel would benefit from this show. Until next time, we'll see you soon on The Switch Point.
The views, opinions, and positions expressed by hosts, guests, contributors, and commenters on this podcast are solely their own and do not necessarily reflect the views, opinions, or positions of Axiom Rail Services or any employee, affiliate, or organization associated with Axiom Rail Services. The appearance of guests, the publication of contributed content, or the discussion of any products, services, or viewpoints does not constitute an endorsement by Axiom Rail Services. Opinions expressed belong to the individuals speaking.